This is the CPC Podcast, Episode 12 for October 21st, 2018. Text of Terror. This podcast was recorded live at Central Presbyterian Church in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. I'm your host, Laura Costner. This week on the show, Reverend Cameron Highsmith returns for a second time to fill the pulpit, and Reverend Highsmith is a chaplain at UAMS in Little Rock. Just a few reminders for the upcoming week. We had some audio difficulties this week. We again apologize for posting this a little later than we usually do. Our annual Trunk or Treat event will be this Saturday, October 27th at 5 p.m. We'll have a bounce house, candy, and hot dogs. Please join us and bring a friend. Central Press PB is the username you need to look to find us on your favorite social media apps. Now, let's turn it over to Reverend Cameron Highsmith.
So the story of David and Bathsheba is horrible. What we read today should shock us. David is a real bad guy in these passages. Let's look at what we just read again really quickly. First, David sent his armies out to take on and destroy the Ammonites in Rabbah. And he stayed home. That's unusual, of course. In the Old Testament days, the king is expected to go out with the army. The king is supposed to lead the army. But David stayed home. And while he was home, David was pacing on his roof. He sees the woman, who we find out is Bathsheba, off in the distance. So he has his messengers go retrieve her. When she got to the palace, he slept with her. This resulted in her getting pregnant. David used his power as king to stay home from war and sleep with another man's wife. But he didn't just sleep with Bathsheba. David raped Bathsheba. The power dynamics at play make this clear. Now, this is bad enough. It's horrible. This is abhorrent behavior from David, who is one of Israel's greatest kings. It's worse than what we read, though. If we take a look at the verses we didn't read today, we see how bad this gets. In verses 8 through 25 of 2 Samuel 11, David calls Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, to his chambers. He tries to convince Uriah to go home and sleep with Bathsheba. Only Uriah was a noble warrior and was fasting during the war, and sex was forbidden during the fast. When David's plan doesn't work, he tries again by getting Uriah drunk. He tempts Uriah in his drunkenness to go back and sleep with his wife. This doesn't work either. Uriah remains too noble. So David sends Uriah off to join the battle at Rabbah. Along with Uriah, David sends word to his commanding officer, Joab, to have Uriah put in a spot where he could be killed. Joab follows this command. This command has devastating consequences. Abimelech, who was the high priest at the time, is killed. And when David is informed of the death of this important man, he says, "Don't be upset about this, because the sword is that way, taking the life of this person or that person." In other words, David says, "As long as Uriah is dead, I get away with what I did. So I'm good." Can't be said enough how bad of a person David is in this story. David, the famed king of Israel, is the absolute worst. And perhaps the most calamitous bit of all this is David didn't think he did anything wrong. He said it himself. I just quoted him saying how he wasn't upset that his head priest was killed because he got away with his plan. David sent Uriah to die because he couldn't trick Uriah into thinking Uriah got Bathsheba pregnant. And when David's high priest was killed because of his plan, he shrugged it off. It needs to be understood we have moved beyond something what we might call privilege in this story. David literally didn't care if he hurt someone else in his endeavors. He saw a woman. He wanted the woman. He took the woman. In doing so, he didn't think at all about whom might else be involved. And when he found out, he tried to sweep it under the rug for his own benefit. He did not do this to make it right for everyone else. He cared for no one but himself. We might call this extreme selfishness, but that's not it either. In this story, David was sociopathic. In Rachel Held Evans' newest book, Inspired, Slaying Giants, Walking on Water, and Loving the Bible Again, she quotes Phyllis Trible, who dubs texts like ours today texts of terror. The problem for Rachel Held Evans reading these types of stories as a young woman was the lack of a lesson learned. I waited, she writes, for a word from God, but no word came. In our text, we do have God coming in to say something. The prophet Nathan confronts David. He engages the king of Israel with a parable. Nathan told the story of two men, one poor and one rich. He explained how the rich man had many a herd of both sheep and cattle. He told of how the poor man only had one small ewe. This was a very important lamb to the poor man. It was more than his property. It was his pet. The lamb grew up with his children. The ewe would eat from the poor man's plate and drink from his cup. He loved it like a daughter. And the rich man took it, killed it, and served it in order to impress a traveler. Of course, David is outraged at the parabolic rich man. Of course he is. David erupts, as surely as the Lord lives, the one who did this is demonic. He must restore the ewe lamb seven times over because he did this and because he had no compassion. People who have the proverbial mirror held up to their own face are often repulsed by what they see. You are that man, Nathan told David. This is what the Lord God of Israel says. I anointed you king over Israel and delivered you from Saul's power. I gave your master's house to you and gave his wives into your embrace. I gave you the house of Israel and Judah. If that was too little, I would have given even more. Why have you despised the Lord's word by doing what is evil in his eyes? You have struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and taken his wife as your own. You used the Ammonites to kill him. God sent Nathan to give direct judgment to David. And that's what happened. David heard God's message loud and clear. Now, if we were to read forward in chapter 12 of Samuel, we would learn how David paid a huge price for his sin. The son birthed by Bathsheba dies. The text tells us this death is punishment for David's deeds. He mourns the boys for days as death approaches. David doesn't eat or sleep. He wouldn't even get up off the ground. So it seems he gets his due, right? And maybe that's the case. What about Bathsheba? Where is her voice in this? How did she feel about David's abuse of her? What were her thoughts and emotions when David had Uriah killed? Did Bathsheba want to marry David after her husband's death? How did Bathsheba feel when her son died? Going back to Rachel Held Evans' books, she engages further with these texts of terror. She says, "The second thing I know is that we are not as different from the ancient Israelites as we would like to believe. It was a violent and tribal culture, people like to say, of ancient Israel to explain away its actions. But as Joshua Ryan Butler astutely observed, we tend to hold the ancients to a much higher standard than we hold ourselves." And in this paragraph, in this section of the book, Evans is talking about the tribal conflict in God-ordained wars led by the leaders of ancient Israel. In her continued thought, Evan goes on to explain war crimes happening around the world. She talks about the devastation of nuclear weapons and how America takes in less than 1% of worldwide refugees despite the country's wealth. Rachel Held Evans directly compares the injustices of ancient Israel to modern injustices found around the globe. This direct comparison applies to David's story too. This is the importance of this text in 2 Samuel. It makes us confront our own society. In our own society, we see this very same behavior played out over and over again. We would have to be blind, deaf, and purposefully, literally putting our heads in the sand to not have heard of the Me Too movement. The story of Bathsheba and David is the ultimate Me Too story of the Bible. The same storyline is not only found in David's abuse of Bathsheba, it's also found in the complete ignorance of Bathsheba's feelings. We don't know anything else about this woman. The story solely focuses on David. Bathsheba's origins, her needs, her dreams, and her feelings are ignored. When David tries to clean up his mess, he ends up sweeping Bathsheba under the rug. She is forgotten and ignored. And after David finishes mourning the death of his resulting son, Bathsheba is only ever called his wife. Bathsheba is erased right in front of our eyes. And this is why the story is so enraging. This story holds up the mirror to our own society's face, and we hate what we see. We know we abuse women in our society. We know we treat women as objects instead of people. We know they're hurt every day. And perhaps worst of all, we know we ignore their feelings and reactions when our society does these things. David's abuse of Bathsheba is God, once again, holding the mirror up to our faces. When we face something we encounter from our past, it is hard to deal with, and we often call it our baggage. Now, my supervisor at UAMS refuses to engage in that language. He often tells us it's not baggage, it's part of who we are. And he's absolutely right. We have to know who we are. We have to know what our past entails. We have to look at these texts of terror and face them head on. As Christians, we have to integrate this awful story of David and Bathsheba into our faith identities. We have to pay attention to what it is calling out of ourselves. If we do not engage with these texts, we only kid ourselves. If we don't see the mirror in front of our face, we fail to move forward. in the long run, if we ignore this part of our faith's information, this formation, we do more damage to the world and ourselves. If we turn a blind eye to our own mistakes, then we are doing injustice to others. We have to look at who we were. We have to look at where we came from. This is how we grow. This is how we move forward. Look, I won't kid around here. It's hard to find hope in the story of David and Bathsheba. The Bible tells us David grew from this encounter, and he did. This was an important growing step for David's self and reign as king. We also look at these verses this morning and see men erasing women. David and the author of 2 Samuel expunge Bathsheba's identity. Maybe overall there's little hope in this particular story. Maybe that's the point of it. Maybe we have to look elsewhere. And Rachel Held Evans does that well. We'll let her do it for us with this quote from her book. Finally, the last thing I know is this. If the God of the Bible is true, and if God became flesh and blood in the person of Jesus Christ, and if Jesus Christ is the revelation that culminates and supersedes all others, then God would rather die by violence than commit it. The cross makes this plain. On the cross, Christ not only bore the brunt of human cruelty and bloodlust and fear, he remained faithful to the nonviolence he taught and modeled throughout his ministry. On the cross, Jesus chose to align himself with victims of suffering rather than the inflictors of it. Amen.
Thanks again to the Reverend Cameron Highsmith. Next week, Reverend Lance Jones fills our pulpit. Reverend Jones is an honorably retired member of the Presbytery of Arkansas. If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please take a minute to subscribe. We are on Apple Podcasts. We're also in the Google Play Store, and we're on the Stitcher app. And leave us a review. It helps people find us. Our theme music is brought to you by Excel Music Publishing, who can be found at www.freemusicpublicdomain.com. That'll do it for this week's episode. I'm your host, Laura Cosner. I hope you have a great week.